Football Weekly.
With more top match coverage than a sulphur factory, it's Football Weekly. Coming up today, the Everton Villa thriller, Ashley Young's brace. Cristiano Ronaldo, we ask, has the Ballon d'Or curse struck already? And we round up all the rest of the Premier League talking points. Elsewhere, Sid Lowe knows, and if he's calling it the best weekend in Spanish football ever, that's good enough for us. There's more Ibrakadabra magic from Zlatan Ibrahimovic in Serie A and more joy of sacks at Torino. And our Dutch correspondent explains why Bobby Robson is so unpopular in Holland. There's a look at the Champions League midweek games, Darren Anderton, Leroy Leiter, and much, much more in today's Football Weekly. Hello there, everybody. On board today, we've got Barry Glendening.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, Barry. Kevin McCarra.
Good day.
Good day to you. And Barney Roney.
Hello.
Indeed so.
Do you notice how Kevin's a pro there? He wasn't as time-specific as I was.
I did notice that.
It's not actually going to be morning when people are listening to this.
It might be.
Some of them.
Yeah. Some. Kevin, you're reeling, of course, from Celtic's 2-0 loss away to Hibs at Easter Road.
I was hoping you wouldn't mention this. Actually, it was well worth seeing for the remarkable 45-yard goal that put Hibs one ahead. Especially because the guy who scored it, John Rankin, says he calls it a squiggler and he practices it.
Squiggler?
Yeah, because the ball moves around all over the place. But it was diabolical because Artur Borut's should easily have got his body behind it despite the movement on the ball. And then Hibs scored again in a breakaway. And Celtic made almost nothing in the game, so Hibs deserved their win.
Half the length of the pitch?
Just beyond the centre circle, but yeah. 45 yards, I reckon.
Magnificent stuff. Everton Aston Villa. Julian Lescott waving his shirt around, etc. Redeeming Phil Jagielka for that hideous back pass. And then what an astonishing finale. What an astonishing beginning to that game as well.
A wonderful shot, wasn't it, by Sidwell? I mean, he's caught it so perfectly. It's just it's not a thing you associate with Sidwell. I mean, he spent a year at Chelsea and just basically disappeared, you know. The goal at the end, funny because Lescott, of course, scored the second goal and then Young went past him for the winner. I know it's crazy to lose a winner when you're in the fourth minute of stoppage time, but I don't really know how he could have stopped it. It was a fantastic bit of play and finishing by Ashley Young.
It was an extraordinary game. A goal in the first 38 seconds, a goal 3 minutes into extra time, and then a match winner straight after.
Yeah, well, I mean, David Moyes sort of said that Everton played wonderfully from the second minute to the 93rd minute, which would normally be enough to get a result. But yeah, they were just outdone, and I think maybe they were still celebrating. Everton were still celebrating their equaliser when Villa took advantage of that. Their lapse in concentration scored a great winner.
Everton were very impressed with the way they pounded and pounded until they got that equaliser, but you felt a bit sorry for them.
Is there a disturbing trend among defenders and the like to basically just willfully fire back passes off at goalkeepers without? It does seem to have been a lot of this happening recently. It used to be the kind of classic thing is that if you're in any doubt, you don't pass it back across the face of goal.
Put it in Rose Ed.
Yeah.
Have
we become a bit too fancy?
Well, it's a sort of tendency of the kind of central defenders who succeed in the Premier League these days, isn't it? This is what we want. We don't want our kind of enormous stick it out of the ground central defenders. We want ball players, and you end up with the odd mistake being made.
The only odd thing is that Jackie Elka has, I think, probably been Everton's best player this season and very, very reliable. He didn't just sort of leave the pass by it short. He angled it perfectly for Ashley Young to bury it. It was a hell of a through ball. But I think in that case it's an aberration. I don't think it reflects some sort of wider problem. I think Jagielka has been fantastic.
Jagielka is a good player and he's a good character because of the way he tried to redeem himself, and he played a huge part in Everton's equaliser. But yeah, he must have been sick afterwards.
Now, a big story going into the weekend, of course, was Sunderland, Barry. In fact, dominating the post.
Something happened.
Something indeed happened.
What's going on?
Well, basically, Roy Keane continued to not turn up for training and will no longer be attending matches.
I wasn't aware
either.
Of that.
Indeed so. And Ricky Spradger, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, am I? There you go, in charge for a valiant Sunderland effort. 90 minutes they held out, and before Vidic eventually gave United the win that kept them in touch with it. They didn't look very impressive, did they, United?
Well, they had a lot of strikers on the pitch, but they didn't seem to create that many clear-cut touches. Although Sunderland were incredibly dogged and committed in their hurling themselves in front of the ball, which was impressive.
Didn't they give some credence to the idea that the players were delighted that Keane had gone? That was the most resilient performance for quite some time.
Interesting.
And also the things in the papers about him and now Quinn had only communicated by text for 6 years.
6 years.
Yeah, 6 years.
Even when they're in
the same
room.
Happy relationship.
Yeah, but yeah, how does that work? And if they had to speak at length, messages were passed through a secretary in the Sunderland office, according to the weekend papers.
So would they like be sitting in the same office? And
texting each other.
Please tell Niles I'm unhappy with X or Y or Z.
I think the paper said the greatest thing was the secretary, who remained friends on good terms with both of them. I think that's quite tricky.
Switzerland, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm just repeating what it said in the newspaper. I take no responsibility for it.
Okay. Sorry, Bunny.
Well, I was just wondering if Barry was looking forward to the big Sam Allardyce era.
I'm not looking forward to any big Sam Allardyce era. Apparently, Martin Jol, there was a lot of money.
Martin Jol, yeah, the odds Yole have shortened. Yeah.
The odds have shortened on him becoming manager. Yeah. I like Martin Jol.
Well, there's all sorts of delights awaiting you and your fellow Sunderland fans. Big Sam, of course, Riggy Spradger's already worked with him at Bolton. Peter Reid, speaking up today.
That's a weird one.
Managing Thailand, so he's got the big game experience.
Yeah. Peter Reid, I mean.
Avram Grant, the list goes on. Gerard Houllier.
If anyone hasn't seen it yet, there's a great documentary called Premier Passions, which was a year in the life of Sunderland under Peter Reid, the year they got relegated from the Premier League. I think last game of the season they needed to beat Wimbledon, stay up, and failed to do so. But, parental advisory, not for the squeamish, but a riveting insight.
How would you feel about Peter Reid coming back?
Nauseous.
But you do feel nauseous anyway, Barry.
No, I feel okay. I mean, Peter Reid did do a good job with something. He got them to seventh in the Premiership.
Right.
But his big managerial sort of tactic seems to be get the lads out for a pint and, you know, foster a good team spirit and hope for the best, and then swear a lot at half time. And, you know, he is very, very old school. But no, I don't think he. I think he's a busted docket as far as managing Premier League teams.
Who would you actually like to have as manager? I mean, of realistic candidates.
Realistic candidates? God, I don't know. I'd like to have Roy Keane back.
Let go, Barry. Got to let go. The other interesting thing about Man United Sunderland was Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm not sure if this was the curse of the Ballon d'Or striking early, but he had a bit of a clash with Andy Reid. They did warn us about Irish pork, didn't they? The dangers of it. But anyway,
he came violently into contact with Andy Reid's abdomen, which is potentially destructive. Yeah,
yeah. And then seemed to play on, and then at a certain point turned, kicked the ball out of play, and just walked straight off down the tunnel without even passing the bench to say, "I'm off, Sir Alex. I'm not feeling up to it."
To be backed up by Alex Ferguson, who clearly doesn't want to offend the guy in any
way. Well, indeed. Yes. Interesting the way the balance of power has shifted.
Until he signs a new contract, it'll be whatever Ronaldo wants, it'll be perfectly okay.
Interesting. I'm not sure if he's meant to be fit for the midweek Champions League games. Man United and Villarreal, the two teams looking for top spot, but they're both qualified in their Champions League group. Man United are taking on Aalborg, Villarreal. United have a better goal difference of 2, he said, to widespread disinterest. Barney, I know you're eager to talk about Arsenal Wigan and the booing of Ibuyi.
Well, I wasn't particularly surprised to hear that the fans had turned on him somewhat. It is something I've slightly noticed at the Emirates, particularly this season, that there seemed to be a lack of patience around the place, and they seem to turn quite quickly. I mean, by all accounts, I wasn't there. He had an absolute shocker, booing the poor lad, it seems a bit much.
I was surprised. He came on for Nasri, who is going to be out for a while, is he, with that ankle? He's certainly not going to be fit for the Champions League.
Won't be fit for the Champions League, no.
Was played as extraordinary R. Van P. Posting. He was played out of position and hasn't been playing much anyway, and was absolutely slaughtered by the crowd. Wenger took him off on the 90th minute. Is that worth doing? Does that not just highlight the problem if you take off a player that you've already put on as a sub?
Well, I think he was genuinely concerned that he was playing so badly he was going to be responsible for conceding a goal. So he had to take one for the team and suffer that humiliation of being taken off. The crowd, while of course they pay their money and a lot of money to attend these games and are therefore entitled to voice their displeasure, I just think it's really, really harsh to boo someone like that, to totally subjecting them to such abject humiliation. The guy did not set out to play badly. We all have shockers or a bad day at the office someday when everything goes pear-shaped, and the harder you try to put things right, the worse they get. You more so than most, James. I've seen many of your broadcasts. But you know, what possible good is booing the guy going to...
He's been a favourite in the past as well. I mean, he had a very good breakthrough season, and he was everybody's favourite attacking right back.
I think the booing is based on fear as well. I mean, Arsenal's chronic problem has been beating the teams they ought to beat. Mm. And there they were at 1-0. The fans are panicking and they see somebody making egregious mistakes. You know? But it doesn't make any sense, of course.
What does egregious actually mean?
Prominent.
I'm glad you asked.
Prominent, blatant, sort of standing out.
Oh, really?
Out.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So, something that stands out.
Right.
Yeah,
so. But a buoy isn't actually match fit, is he? So there are certain extenuating
It's just counterproductive anyway, as you say. Yeah. Buoying is just going to make
things worse. It does emphasise the fact they do have a slight problem at the Emirates. I mean, this is a new ground. It's never been the loudest. And they have a singing section, I mean, to their eternal shame. And you would have thought booing your own player is really not a good thing to be doing right now. Mm.
Now, Liverpool had a 3-1 victory at Ewood Park. Remember when Ewood Park was a difficult place to go to? That's now, what is it, the fifth defeat in a row for Paul Ince's Rovers. He declared himself happy. It was a spirited performance, and Tugo in particular looked desperately upset when Liverpool eventually managed to score their first goal, and a couple more followed. Pressure on Paul Ince, so there's a lot of talk that if things don't go well for them next weekend against Wigan, at Wigan, that he might walk.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mark Hughes left at a brilliant time. He'd taken him so high, and there were going to be problems with players, Bentley going, and someone like Santa Cruz not having as good a season was kind of predictable, wasn't it? It wasn't going to happen 2 years in a row. I think it's Hardens. I mean, he has proved himself to an extent in the lower divisions, and I hope it gets a bit longer, but... His comments after the game didn't sound all that convincing, and you wonder whether people are really still have enough belief in him.
Mm. Yeah,
I hope it turns around for Paul Ince. The clubs where he has been in the Football League, people still speak really highly of him, and you know, it seems a very brief managerial career at the top in the top level to be going now.
Wigan and then Stoke for Blackburn, so two huge games there. Liverpool, meanwhile, are taking on Marseille. They're at PSV. And they're having that battle with Atletico to see who's going to win the group. They're both through. Bolton-Chelsea. Chelsea getting that record-setting 11th away win. Hey-ho. And they are in the only Champions League group that has anything of interest about it, really, because this is the only group where the two qualifying places aren't yet... the two teams going through aren't yet known. Basically, they're going to be at home to Cluj. Roma are hosting Bordeaux. Roma are top. Then you've got Chelsea and then Bordeaux, but only 2 points separating the top three. Chelsea need at least a draw. They need a draw unless Bordeaux win at Roma, in which case they need a win against Cluj. You've got to figure they'll get a win against Cluj anyway.
Even without Lampard, you can't see...
What's happened to him?
Well, he got sent off in the last game.
Ah!
So they're without Lampard.
Right.
The game before that, Deco sent off, wasn't it? They had a really, really unruly time in the Champions League.
I think they'll be a little worried, won't they? I mean, they're very poor against Bordeaux. And midfield really didn't function, and needing to win is never easy.
They've only picked up 1 point from the last two games. Sorry, Barry.
If they need a result against the Romanian champions or whatever at home, if they don't get it, then they deserve to go out of the tournament.
Right, and Scolari will return to Brazil at that point.
But so he says.
So he says.
I reckon he might be bluffing, though.
I wonder if we'll find out. Interesting. Now, very, very shortly, we'll be hearing from Sid Lowe on an extraordinary weekend in the Liga.
Football Weekly from Guardian.co.uk.
Sid Lowe in Spain. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you, James. How are you?
Excellent. Are you still coming down on from all the thrills and spills of the Liga weekend?
It was absolutely fantastic. It really was. 44 goals this weekend. It's the best weekend in terms of goals since there was a 20-team league in Spain, which makes it the best weekend ever since 1988, and only the second best ever since 1950. Just fantastic amounts of goals. And it's not just this weekend as well, it's the fact that this confirms a trend. 414 goals so far this season, and this weekend was brilliant. I mean, you just go through the results, and it sounds like a throwback to the old days. And let me just give you some of the results. 5-2, 3-3, 4-0, 3-2, 3-3, and a 4-3, which, of course, the final one was Real Madrid losing at home to Sevilla.
That's amazing. And all this, and Titus Bramble's not even playing in your league. It's extraordinary.
Incredible. Although there's one or two here that will give Titus Bramble a bit of a run for his money.
Yes, right. Sid, can I ask you, the left back for Barcelona, who was he, for heaven's sake? It was incredible last night. He was really vulnerable.
just they are. I mean, at the moment, all defences are looking vulnerable in Spain. Mm. I thought, you know, I mean, everyone's excited, and of course, it's been great fun watching the way teams are playing in Spain, and mostly they're pretty attacking, and mostly it's pretty good to watch, with the exception of one or two. I mean, for example, Numancia are not worth watching, Almeria not worth watching, Deportivo not normally worth watching. But the defences, it's true, the defences have been pretty poor so far this season.
Sid, tell us about that Barcelona game then, first of all. A Thierry Henry hat-trick. Is he back to his Arsenal form?
Well, it was definitely the best he's played for Barcelona. I think I wouldn't go quite so far to say that he's back to what he was at Arsenal. Bear in mind, obviously, that Arsenal was built around him. He had real freedom to move. He was able to do whatever he wanted, to drift out to the wing and pick the ball up and run in. But at Barcelona, he's not just playing on the left wing for Barcelona, but Pep Guardiola is really obsessed with opening the pitch up and making the attacks have as much width as possible, so that the two wide men, while they can come inside when they get the ball, their starting point is nearly always right on the touchline. That said, Henri got his first goal with a clipped ball over the top, just dashing through the middle and putting it over the goalkeeper. And he did look very, very sharp. He looked a very, very willing runner. And I thought he was good on the ball as well, Henri. And it was certainly the best he's played. Not the first time he's got a hat-trick for Barcelona, but a lot better than the last time.
My word. How many points are they now clear of Real Madrid?
Well, at the moment, you look at the top of the table, Barcelona have 35 points. Madrid are fifth on 26. And possibly even more worrying than that is that next weekend, if Real Madrid lose to Barcelona at the Camp Nou, which, of course, the way things are right now is very likely, and not only that, but Bernd Schuster said last night they have no chance of winning there. If Madrid were to lose next week at the Camp Nou, and Atletico Madrid and Deportivo both win, Real Madrid would find themselves in seventh.
Sid, is that not an extraordinary thing for Bernd Schuster to say?
It's an absolutely ridiculous thing for Bernd Schuster to say, because the truth is that even if he thinks that's true, a Real Madrid coach can never say publicly that he thinks he's got no chance of being in Barcelona. And I think what he did last night, and obviously it's difficult to know for certain how to read Bernd Schuster's words, but I think there are a number of possibilities. One of which, I think, is the possibility that he was inviting Real Madrid to sack him by saying that. The other possibility is that you know, it was some kind of cunning reverse psychology to try and wind his players up, which is a possibility, because it does seem that while some of the players completely ignore Schuster, some of them quite like the idea of, I think, getting a kick to get them started. And then the other possibility, of course, the third and final one, is the fact that perhaps he was just being honest.
So you can see, all the listeners may recall Arjen Robben playing well, and it happened again last night. It was until he got himself sent off for dissent over, and it should have been a penalty, but he wasn't even the player being fouled, and he gets sent off somewhat erratic. But he's erratic, and so too is the defence. Is Christoph Metzelder, despite playing for Germany, so bad he cannot be allowed onto the pitch?
Well, Christoph Metzelder this weekend was injured, but
he's on the bench.
But he was injured. That tells you how bad Real Madrid's squad is at the moment in terms of its physical condition, in terms of how many players are out. But the answer to your question is still yes. Christoph Metzelder is so slow that Real Madrid just cannot risk playing him, or at least Bernd Schuster believes they cannot risk playing him. As for Robben, I mean, Robben last night, I think he and Higuain, who really were the two key players in launching the comeback for Real Madrid in the second half, because, of course, they were 3-1 down, it came back to 3-3. And when Robben was sent off, he was sent off appealing for a penalty that would have made it 4-3 to Real Madrid. And I have to say, I think Robben was probably right.
It was
a penalty. But it was really Robben and Higuain who dragged them through. And I think we saw last night how much Real Madrid have missed those two, basically because they run at people and because they're quick. And without them, Real Madrid looked like a really flat, really slow side. Now, Raul has his qualities, but pace certainly isn't one of them.
To what extent is it an injury crisis, which I know you've talked about in the past? I mean, getting rid of Schuster, impolitic though he may be in some of his declarations, isn't going to resolve the injury crisis. And who exactly are they going to bring in that's suddenly going to magic this team into shape?
Well, these are the questions that Real Madrid need to deal with before they decide what to do with Schuster. Now, obviously, there's a certain Juan de Ramos available, which wouldn't be a bad option for Real Madrid. The two options of promoting from within, one was Michel, who was the director of the youth system at Real Madrid. Well, he walked out last week, slagging off Ramon Calderon as president. The scouting director, the technical director, Miguel Ángel Portugal, has said publicly that he doesn't want to be coached. So that emergency option is out the window as well. If Schuster was to go, he would take his number two with him. The B team coach, Julen Lopetegui, I don't think he's ready for it. I think by his own admission, isn't ready for it yet. He's still only 6 months into his first ever job as a coach, although he is very bright and very alert. So Real Madrid do have a problem there. As you rightly say, the injury crisis isn't Schuster's fault. The complete lack of a right-sided midfielder isn't Schuster's fault. That's the club's fault. They didn't buy anyone because they went absolutely crazy trying to get Ronaldo, completely ignored all other options and ended up not getting him and then blew it at the last minute as they tried to bring in other players. That said, there are things that Schuster's doing wrong. He's losing the squad. He's prickly with people. Tactically, you look at it and he plays without a right-sided midfielder. He plays this kind of bizarre 4-3-3, which isn't really 4-3-3 at all, that just doesn't work. There's literally nothing on one side of the pitch.
A couple of posts, Sid, if I may. P. Pirate asks, is it true that the collapse in the Spanish real estate market, is going to have a significant effect on teams in La Liga because lots of them are either owned by real estate companies or heavily reliant on sponsorship from real estate companies, etc., Sid?
The answer to that is it's absolutely true, because a lot of them are reliant on that sort of thing. I mean, bear in mind, of course, that Real Madrid resolved their debt a few years ago by selling the old training ground and building four big towers on there and making over €400 million.
P. Pirate asks, is it true those towers are nicknamed Beckham, Figo and Ronaldo?
Yeah, informally, yes, because, of course, this was the Galactico period and the money from that training ground sale was the money that went towards buying those players. The other club that's very, very significantly affected by the current real estate crisis is Valencia. Now, because Valencia are building a new stadium, of course, building a new stadium is going to be paid for by selling the old one. They haven't been able to sell it. Last week, Valencia were denied a €100 million loan by a local savings bank that's connected to the local government in Valencia. And Vicente Soriano, the president, who only 3 weeks ago was telling us what great shape Valencia were in and how he managed to resolve the financial crisis, last week had to admit that, technically speaking, Valencia are bankrupt.
My word. Excellent stuff, Sid. Matteo 83 asks that you bring back your phrase of the week. Surely you are the suave ladies' man when you speak Spanish, says Matteo 83. When you said se vendieron, I rather doubt it has the same effect from my mouth. I was almost ready to go to bed with him, says Matteo 83. Give us perhaps a phrase of the week, a financially related one, Sid.
Well, you know what the phrase of the week is. Unfortunately, the phrase of the week in Spain is actually in English because the referee noted what Aaron Robben was sent off for saying yesterday, and it was in English, and it was two words, and the first word started with an F, and the second word started with a Y.
Right.
But that was rather unfortunate that the referee understood. Obviously,
I'm sure out of your mouth that would charm Matteo 83 all the same. For the rest of us,
sure it would. Yes. I'm sure it would. For the rest of you, it would sound vulgar and crass and the kind of thing I'd never say. Obviously,
do you have something else of a more Hispanic nature?
How about we're going to talk about the financial crisis. The word they've all talked about is burbuja, and the burbuja is the bubble. The bubble has very definitely burst in the financial, particularly in the real estate market, and also in the football market in Spain now.
Burbuja, is that right?
Burbuja. B-U-R-B-U-J-A. Burbuja.
Sid.
Whoa. You've melted, haven't you?
Yes, indeed. Whoa, what were we talking of? Right, okay, Sid, listen, that's excellent. Thank you very much indeed. And we'll look forward to speaking to you on Thursday.
Yeah, which of course will be the build-up to Real Madrid, which could be very, very interesting indeed.
My word. Excellent. Sid Lowe there in Spain. Italy. Villa USA posting and say, did anyone see the skill exhibited by Zlatan Ibrahimovic today? That's in the match away to Lazio. Maybe the most ridiculous pass I've ever seen. I could try and explain it in words what Zlatan did. But
ridiculously good or ridiculously bad?
No, it was ridiculously good, but just bizarre. I mean, watching it, I felt, why didn't you head it? He's really tall. He's about, 6'7" or something, Zlatan. And the ball comes in at head height. So you think he could have just... I think it was Maicon who kicked it upfield to Zlatan at about head height. He could have just headed it on to whoever was further up on the wing. But instead, he did a kind of windmill kick. He did a kind of vertical splits. Seriously, he did a kind of vertical splits where one leg's still down, pointing downwards, the other one points directly up. And with that, he flicked the ball up. So his head's kind of like now down around where his midriff should be, and his foot's way up in the air, and he just flicks, guides the ball on perfectly to his inter-colleague further upfield. I can't remember who that is. Why, I don't know, but because he can, I guess, because he spent most of that game wandering around with a big grin on his face going, I'm much better than you. And Cristiano Brocchi, who was attempting to control, to mark him, ended up with a booking because he absolutely lost his rag with it when Zlatan was just standing there with his foot on the ball for a while. And Brocchi was like, I'm going to get him. And Ibrahimovic was going, come on. Brocchi runs forward and Zlatan just wanders off with the ball, a bit like we've seen Rooney and Ronaldo doing with it when they're on their game. And then Brocky clatters into him and gets carded. But anyway, it was a huge victory for Inter. 3-0 away to Lazio. And Zlatan was in fine fooling. And they remain 6 points clear at the top of Serie A ahead of Juventus and Milan. Juve and Milan are facing each other next weekend in Turin, in what will no doubt be billed as the big game to find out who's going to be the challenger for Inter.
Finish 1-0 to one of them.
Well, indeed, probably. Juve won 2-1 at Lecce. Milan had a 1-0 win at Catania. They had no Ronaldinho, no Pirlo and no Seedorf. Kaká, who I'm sure English clubs will have been interested to see, was making one or two noises about being unhappy with his kind of tactical role within the side since the arrival of Ronaldinho, was the man up front without Ronaldinho in the side. It was much more direct style of football from Milan. He played further up front. He enjoyed more freedom. He scored the goal, etc. Other news in Italy, Roma won their fifth game in six games. Roma had their sixth win in... No, wait. In other news, Roma had their fifth win in their last six. That was at Chievo. Big news here was the fact that Jeremy Menez, who they'd signed, a 21-year-old Frenchman, for $9 million from, was it Monaco, got a rare, I think it was maybe in his first start of the season. He responded with a brilliant performance and the only goal. Roma are now 11th with the game in hand. Napoli is still fourth. They won against Siena. Fiorentina thumped Torino 4-1, which probably won't excite you too much, except that the Torino manager, Gianni Di Biasi, is now set to be sacked, probably already sacked by the time you hear this. The fans had originally had a petition at the end of last week to keep him because he's already under threat. And after the game, though, they walked out during the match, so bad was the performance, threw eggs outside the stadium. And
they came to the game with eggs. I'm always surprised by that kind of
thing. Well, I think if you're a Torino fan, you probably
bring your eggs with
you. eggs and that. And he may be making an exit, as I say. Oh, because which won't be a new experience. He has, in fact, been fired three times by Torino in the last 2 years. He famously won the promotion. And then about 2 days before the start of the season, he was rung up while having his meal at a restaurant in Turin on a Saturday night by the president, who was saying, Gianni, I've got a bit of a problem. I want to fire you, but what am I going to tell the press?
So what did he tell the press?
I don't know how the rest of the conversation went, but Gianni was rather upset about this and told the press, you know, basically I was rung up and his only question was, how do you think I should spin this? But then after a couple of months, things went so badly that he was called back in, kept them up, and then got fired again at the end of the season, got called up this time, and off he goes again. The other news that we should mention, a Genoa derby, which Genoa won, was a very heated affair, especially after Cassano made his usual silly remarks going into the game. 11 bookings there were. Diogo Milito won the game with his 12th goal of the season. What a signing he is proving to be. Stefan Ruud posting in saying the Dutch Eredivisie, this was actually a week ago, is shaping up to be the most open and exciting in years, yet barely gets a mention during the pod. I protest. Stefan, you're absolutely right. It does barely get a mention. And because you posted, we've decided to ring up the Guardian's Dutch correspondent and we'll be speaking to him right after this. Joining us on the line is the Guardian's very own Eredivisie correspondent, Leander Scheer-Lakens.
Hi, James.
Hi, Leander. Excellent. Well, listen, it's very kind of you to join us today. We haven't really afforded the Eredivisie as much attention as it warrants, despite the fact they always have fantastic end-of-season finales and that, which we were very excited about. But, of course, the big news this weekend is Steve McClaren's FC Twente and their 6-2 victory over Sparta.
Well, yes. I mean, it was a very big win. McLaren's team have consistently improved over the season. We were all a bit skeptical about him when he first came here. Joop Munsterman, who is the very ambitious chairman of Twente, was said to especially want to bring in a big name. But the unanimous opinion in the Netherlands was that McLaren was very much a bad match for Twente because the last big-name British manager that was here was Sir Bobby Robson, who didn't impress us in the slightest, nor his players for that matter, because of his tactical ignorance, which, you know, is a bit of a mortal sin in the Netherlands. But he's consistently improved. In his first few matches, he showed a very good performance against Arsenal. Of course, they didn't go through to the Champions League, but a team like Twente can't really be expected to against Arsenal. But they've been growing, and they've been getting better and better, and they're a very exciting team at the moment.
Well, they scored 10 goals in their last two games, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Phenomenal. It's just like the old Borough days. a bit. They're also through to the last 32 in the UEFA Cup. So basically, he's won over the critics now. Nobody's calling him tactically inept anymore.
Not anymore, no. I think he played it very well by implementing as little changes as possible when he took over from Fred Rutten. Rutten went to Schalke before the season, Schalke 04 in Germany, and he was very popular with the fans, and he implemented a structure that was perfect for a sort of mediocre-sized club, a medium-sized club like Twente, which allowed them to sort of play above their level. And so what he did is, what McLaren did was make as few changes as needed. And he also has the benefit of having a very strong backline, which for the most part he inherited from Rutten.
So has McLaren actually done anything, or has he just kept picking the same players? What's his masterstroke?
Well, he's not done nothing, certainly. He's kept on the line that they were going with, and he's kept Twente have a very nice combination of veteran players and young players coming through.
And a good manager as well?
Continue. Excuse me?
Good manager too?
He appears to be, yeah. I mean, from the results so far, I mean, with the team he has, he's performing very well.
And for once, I have to speak up for Steve McLaren. He was never good enough to be England manager. But he did win a trophy for Middlesbrough, and I don't know when that will happen next. He also got into the UEFA Cup final, where they were totally destroyed. But at least they got them there. I don't think he's the world's worst manager. He just wasn't good enough to be England's manager. And I think the strain on him and the contempt for his work grew and grew.
Well, of course, the England debacle is one strike against him in England. Also, the famous incident of the comedy Dutch accent, which he no doubt this made news, did it, in Holland as well, Leander, the bizarre Dutch affectations of Steve McLaren when talking to English journalists after his move across there.
Well, it certainly made the news. It wasn't nearly as big of a story as it was in England. What he claims he was doing is that he was trying to simplify the English he was speaking to make it easier on the Dutch. But why he did that exactly is unclear, because, I mean, as you probably know, most Dutchmen speak perfectly good English, so he really didn't need to. But right. That was his excuse.
Right. Are they worried about losing him now to, say, Sunderland?
Well, like you said, he has been mentioned for the Sunderland job. He says he's not interested in it. I mean, it wouldn't entirely make sense for him to go, because he's starting to build up some credit with Twente, because what he is doing is remarkable. He's moving on this path that Breton had began, and that nobody thought he'd be capable of sustaining. And they have every chance of making a good season of it, because there's sort of this perfect storm of consequences in the Netherlands where PSV and Ajax and Feyenoord are all a shambles, and where the league really is up for grabs. And they're in third place, and they're only 5 points off the first place, and they're only 2 points off another qualifier round for the Champions League next year. They're into the next round of the UEFA. They're in the last 16 of the Dutch Cup, where Ajax and PSV have already been eliminated. So it wouldn't make a ton of sense for him to leave right now.
Mm. You're saying it's probably the most open Dutch season in ages?
And it certainly is. I mean, AZ are in first place and are looking outstanding, and I'd call them the favorites to win it this year. And AZ, incidentally, were also the first team, or the last team, really, not named Ajax, PSV, or Feyenoord to win the Dutch Championship in 1981.
Leander, can I ask you about Dutch football in general? I mean, obviously, like countries like Portugal and even my own country, Scotland, they don't have the players or the standard of teams they used to have. Is there still the same enthusiasm for the game in Holland, or do people all keep on talking about the great days when Kluivert was playing for Ajax and so on, and Cruyff? Or what is the attitude towards football in Holland now?
And so, corollary question, how is the impending sale of Huntelaar to Real Madrid, how will that affect things?
Well, in Holland, we're still very excited about our league. We've always known that we were sort of a feeder league to England and Spain and Italy, and we're quite happy in that. It's always been that way. Our good players never stick around for very long. But be that as it may, everybody's good players leave. So it sort of balances out the league. It's not like there's one club that can afford to hold on to its good players and all the other ones can't. Everybody loses their good players, so everything stays in balance. And it is a very exciting league. I mean, the past two seasons were electric. This season looks to be extremely exciting from start to finish. And I would say, looking at Europe, the Dutch is probably the most exciting league people aren't watching, because every single year there is the championship appears to be decided on the last day. As for Huntelaar, we are disappointed to see him go. He was a phenom. He was always fun to watch. But a player like that, you know that sooner or later he's going to go. A guy that scores 30 goals is just not going to be in Holland for that long.
Leander, can I just pick you up on your comment about Bobby Robson? I think you used the phrase tactically inept. Is that your own view? Is that really what how he's seen in Holland?
That's absolutely how he's recognised by most Dutch football fans that witnessed his two stints with PSV.
So he's just a sort of travelling, he's just getting away with it. So he's in England to a World Cup semi-final. He won the UEFA Cup with Ipswich. Is it not just a cultural clash, the Dutch way against the English way? Really, he's seen as a total ignoramus. Poor old
Bobby. Well, total ignoramus would be taking it a bit far, but it is a cultural thing. Our managers are expected to first of all play nice attacking football, which he did for the most part. But they're expected to be innovative and to come up with new ways of having their team play better than they really are. And anyone that doesn't do that is very quickly portrayed as someone who doesn't understand his craft.
What about his switch of formation at the 1990 World Cup, which so baffled the Dutch team during the 0-0 group game?
Well, that may be the exception that confirms the rule.
That's probably the reason they're all so bitter. And
right. You've never got over it.
Not over that. Brilliant. Listen, Leander, that was an excellent report. And of course, your roundups on the Eredivisie are available at guardian.co.uk weekly. Is that right?
Yes, every Monday.
Every Monday, Magnus. Well, we hope to be speaking to you again soon then. Thanks, Leander.
So. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Barry, you want to talk about Darren Anderton, don't you? It's your
I
last
do.
Chance.
I can't think of anything I'd rather do than talk about Darren Anderton, who has handed in his last ever sick note. He retired on Saturday after a Roy the Rovers-esque finale to his career. He scored the winner in a 1-0 Bournemouth victory. I believe it's his hometown club, am I right?
Well, he comes That's from right. nearby, yeah. Mm.
And I'm not quite sure why he decided to retire, but I think...
He said he couldn't cope with the training anymore. I just found it too hard, the day-to-day grind of training.
Maybe there's a tough trip to Blyth Spartans coming up as well. He probably wanted to avoid that. Producer Pete was just leaping in to make the extremely important point that these are Bournemouth's first points.
Yes, they're on three.
Of the season.
And they're only two wins away from getting out of the relegation zone, having started on minus 17.
And who else? Luton, they're still in
They're on minus seven.
Yeah, they won at the weekend, that's didn't they?
And Rotherham, they started at minus 18.
Yeah, but they started off pretty
something.
Well. They cleared the deficit and they've started losing a lot recently. They're heading south, so they may well end up in there. But there's always the prospect of other teams going to administration later in the season, so it's not over until everyone's been docked.
It makes it very exciting, this kind of random joker card plays. Yeah. You know, you think you've won the league, but no, you're being relegated instead.
Well,
you're
on minus 7 points and you've still got plenty of hope for how things might turn out, because everyone else is broke.
Quite a great league.
Something else you wanted to talk to us about.
Oh, Leroy Lita's
piece
of cunning.
What happened there? What was that?
Well, Ipswich and Norwich played yesterday in an East Anglian derby, there was no train. It was on in Ipswich or in Norwich, and no trains were cancelled from Ipswich to Norwich for the day, you know, as
was this a security thing? Or what?
No, just because they needed to do work on the tracks. Or
oh,
something.
I see.
So they decided to close the track on the one day of the year that it was guaranteed to be huge traffic and call for demand for seats on trains. But anyway, Leroy Lita didn't have anything to do with that. But Norwich were a goal up, and they won a free kick. And Gareth McCauley, the Ipswich centre half, had blood on his face, which Leroy Lita very slyly pointed out to the referee. So the referee was obliged to tell Mr. McCauley to leave the field of play to get the wound cleaned, and you know, because you can't have blood spattered around the pitch. And when McCauley left the field, the free kick was swung into the Gareth McCauley-shaped hole in the Ipswich defence, whereupon Matty Pattinson blasted it into the back of the net. Leroy Lita, very cunning. I have to say, I wouldn't have had him pegged as the sharpest tool in the shed, but that was very crafty.
We have to commend Jim Magilton, the losing manager, who didn't go into tirade and saying somehow unfair. He said it was very bright of Lita. If managers are going to be fair and realistic, no wonder they're stuck in the lower divisions. They'll never cut it in the big time with that kind of attitude.
There you go. That's it for today. We'll be back, of course, with a roundup of all the midweek Champions League action. There is, of course, one game going on tonight. Spurs are at West Ham.
Well, having confidently predicted that Bolton would beat Chelsea at the weekend and got that spectacularly wrong, I'm confidently predicting a draw this evening.
Oh, you know. Yes. I think most people, the game will probably have been played. Although, actually, Producer Pete's so quick at getting these things up.
Producer Pete's so quick, he often has the podcast up on the site before we've even finished.
Indeed, indeed. We'll be back anyway with our roundup of all the latest stuff and a preview of the weekend on Thursday, so we'll speak to you then.